The history of rock and roll continues with music from the late 50s and early 60s. It was a time when girl groups started happening, and one of the first was the Chantels. Maybe from the Chantels, featuring the lead vocal of Arlene Smith. In 1958, black girl groups like the Chantels were rare in pop music. Only the Teen Queens, Bobettes, Quintones, and Chantels had even brushed the top 20. And even then, only one time each. In 1958, though, a new girls group appeared. From Passaic, New Jersey, the Shirelles.
Tonight you're mine. Can't be sure of. So tell.
The Shirelles and Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, one of the first hit songs ever written by Carole King. Record executive Florence Greenberg remembered how the Shirelles got started.
In the town where we lived, there was only one school, and the Shirelles were four classmates who sang together at class functions, and the girls are all within the same school year age, so that they went through school from kindergarten all the way through graduating high school together and were good friends. And my daughter felt that something should be done for them.
Florence Greenberg formed a record company, Scepter Records, and started to promote the music of the Shirelles. More than two dozen hits was the result, including one recorded in one take and renamed by the girls in the studio.
I wrote a song called I'll Be True to You because my teenagers around me were constantly discussing being true to their boyfriends. If you notice, the body of the song has nothing about a soldier in it. At the session, which I...
Soldier Boy from the Shirelles, who preceded the Supremes as rock's original female supergroup. 1963, the year after Soldier Boy, was also the year of another all-girl quartet from the streets of New York. We'll hear their classic in a moment on the history of rock and roll. We continue now with a history of rock and roll.
You're gonna want me for your girl.
The Chiffons and One Fine Day, another early rock classic written by Carole King. Among the top girl groups of 1963 were the Angels, who got together while singing in their high school choir. Lead singer, Peggy McGannon.
I like improvisation. I think that's a very important part of music. My boyfriend's back was kind of an interesting story. Our producers at the time wrote the song, but they did not write the opening monologue and the ending, which I had to ad-lib in the studio. And it was just kind of fun. The music just kept playing, and I just said, oh, well, I'll just keep singing here. And that ended up being part of the song.
He went away, and you hung around and bothered me every night. And when I wouldn't go out with you, you said things that weren't very nice. My boyfriend's back, and you're gonna be in trouble.
Hey, la, hey, la, my boyfriend's back.
When you see him coming, better cut out on the double.
Hey, la, hey, la, my boyfriend's back.
You've been spreading lies that I was untrue. Look out now, cause he's coming after you.
My Boyfriend's Back from the Angels, who later did a lot of session work, backing, among others, Neil Diamond. Most girl groups of the early 60s fell into one of two categories. They were either sweet, cuddly, and lovable, or they were not. It was a golden age for punk goddesses, tough on the outside, yet warm and willing on the inside. One of the most successful of these groups was comprised of two sets of twin sisters from New York City, the Shangri-Las.
I'm gonna hide if she don't leave me alone. I'm gonna run away.
Don't,
'cause you can. Listen, does this sound familiar? You wake up every morning, go to school every day, spend your nights on the corner, just passing time away. Your life is so lonely, like a child without a toy. Then a miracle, a boy. And that's called glad. She's a good mom, and she loves me with all her heart. But she said I was too young to be in love, and the boy and I would have to part. And no matter how I ranted and raved, I screamed, I pleaded, I cried. She told me it was not really love, but only my girlish pride. And that's called bad.
Never go home anymore.
Now, if that's happened to you, don't let this. I packed my clothes and left home that night. Though she begged me to stay, I was sure I was right. And you know something funny? I forgot that boy right away. Instead, I remember being tucked in bed and hearing my mama say,
"Hush, little baby.
To mine. She grew so lonely in the end. Angels picked her for their friend.
Never.
And I can never go home.
Never.
Anymore. And that's called sad.
I Can Never Go Home Anymore, written and produced by George Morton. George blended strings, sound effects, and intimate girl gossip to create perfect three-minute melodramas for the Shangri-Las. He talked about his motivation behind their biggest hit record.
When I get hung up into a bag, I have a few clubs that I call up, and that consists of about 65 motorcycles, which I lead, and we go out riding, you know.
Is she really going out with him?
Well, there she is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it must be great riding with him. Is he picking you up after school today?
I met him at the candy store. He turned around and smiled at me. You get the picture?
Yes, we see.
That's when I fell for
the leader of the pack.
The Shangri-Las and Leader of the Pack from the fall of 1964. Girl group rock, like Leader of the Pack, was essentially the work of record producers. 50s records were pretty straight, but in the early 60s, electronic gimmicks, sound effects, and multi-track recording became increasingly popular. The producers took over, often creating sounds in the studio that could not be duplicated live. Coming up, the producer's producer, Phil Spector, and the music that made him the most respected and imitated producer of the 60s. The Ronettes are next, as the history of rock and roll goes walkin' in the rain. The history of rock and roll continues with the early productions of Phil Spector. Walkin' in the Rain from the Ronettes, Ronnie, Estelle, and Nedra. They got together in 1959, making their professional debut at the Peppermint Lounge in New York City as part of Joey D's review. Phil Spector discovered them there in 1963, and within a few months, he had co-written and produced their all-time biggest hit.
Be mine.
5 years after Be My Baby, Ronettes lead singer Ronnie Bennett and Phil Spector were married in Hollywood. But the most successful of Phil Spector's girl groups was one he discovered by accident while overhearing their audition at a New York publishing company. There were five Brooklyn high school girls, and they call themselves the Crystals.
Always dreamed the boy I loved would come along, and he'd be tall and handsome, rich and strong. Now that boy I love has come to me, but he sure ain't the way I thought he'd be.
The Crystals, along with the Ronettes, the Righteous Brothers, and Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans, all shared approximately the same backup band in the early 60s, the Phillies Records House Band. It was comprised of struggling, unknown, yet promising young talent. Among them, Glenn Campbell played guitar, Leon Russell piano, and the backup singers included everyone from Nino Tempo and April Stevens to Sonny and Cher. In 1963, the Crystals had their fourth million seller, with a song written especially for them by Jeff Berry, Ellie Greenwich, and Phil Spector.
I saw him.
Lenny Kiss Me by the Crystals, one of the finest examples of what girl group rock was all about. It was a different kind of music, full of intense feeling, of sentiment, and desire.
Some of the music is quite different, but a lot of it is the same. You know, just the voices are different, instrumentation, but it's basically the same thing.
Dee Dee Kennebrew of the Crystals, who talks about her favorite song.
The one I enjoy doing the most, I think, is the Do Run Run. I think maybe just because it's lively, the beat keeps going, you know.
The Crystals, with a distinctive production of Phil Spector.
I think there's a definite Spector sound. Matter of fact, I dig him, and I always have.
Bobby Hatfield of the Righteous Brothers, whose biggest hits were also produced by Phil Spector.
I enjoyed working with him very much. He's got some different ways about him. He makes it tough on you. He was the hardest record producer that I had ever worked for, because I've never gone into a session and come out 8 or 10 hours later, you know.
Phil Spector's recording sessions were musical marathons, running all night if need be, until horns, guitars, drums, and voices blended perfectly. No one else had ever lavished such care, time, and money on a single 45 RPM record. And no one else had ever had so many hits. Of the first 30 singles that Spector produced for his own label, Philly's Records, 27 made the charts. 9 were top 10, and 3 reached number 1. The biggest was a Righteous Brothers record released late in 1964. Bobby Hatfield.
There were a lot of stories that it took us 60 takes, and that's not true. It wasn't that long at all. And it was a groove. I think it was the best thing he ever did.
The best of Phil Spector, next on the History of Rock and Roll. We continue now with the History of Rock and Roll.
You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. There's no tenderness like before in your fingertips. You're trying hard not to show it, but baby, baby, I know it. You lost that love and feeling. Oh, that love. There's no welcome look in your eyes when I reach for you.
starting to criticize little things I do. It makes me just feel like crying. Cause baby, something beautiful found in you, lost that love and feeling. Oh, that love and feeling. You lost that love and feeling. Now it's gone, gone, gone. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Baby, baby, I'd get down on my knees for you. If you would only love me like you used to do, yeah. We had a love you don't find every day.
Bobby Hatfield, the higher-voiced Righteous Brother, recalls playing back You've Lost That Love and Feeling.
It was something that that Billy and I dug from the minute we heard it. And then, matter of fact, the night that we mixed it down, that Philly mixed it down, we had a little function up at his house, and we must have sat around and listened to it for 5 hours. I mean, that's kind of really weird when you can sit and listen to one record for 5 hours, but... Again, a fantastic production.
A record producer hears more than most record buyers, and Phil Spector was gifted with two of the best ears in the business. So we invited him to listen to and comment on several classic oldies for the history of rock and roll. It was a blindfold test in that he didn't know which records were to be played for him. The session began with the Teddy Bears' To Know Him Is to Love Him, which Spector wrote and produced in 1957.
This is a funny record. This record was cut with just guitar, and there's no bass on the record, and I sang ba da da da.
I'd be good to him.
A million overdubs, and I played the drum, and then I couldn't make it on the drum because it was too hard to play all the instruments at the same time. So Sandy Nelson, before he was Sandy, played the drum.
Walk alongside of him. Oh, yes, yes, to know.
old tired story, but this is the on my father's grave. This is "To Know Him, Must to Love Him" was the theme that my mother had written there, and it always intrigued me, and that was the story of the song.
The Phil Spector blindfold test on the history of rock and roll continues with the biggest hit of the Skyliners, "Since I Don't Have You."
It's a great, great record. This company went out of business. This is a hell of a... This is one of the great lead singers of all time, man. This was a contribution. Great contribution, this record. Skyliners. Pittsburgh, PA. All right. This record just was a winner record. You just dug and just listened to. You could say the piano was too loud. You could say technically a lot of things, but you didn't have to. Listen to the strings play pizzicato riffs in the middle here. I mean, that's very, very clever. Nobody was doing that then except maybe Mitch Miller 10 years earlier. Alone too on Cold Picks, and nothing happened. Jimmy Beaumont, that was his name. He had the oboes and clarinets. How about the soprano? It proved to me that it could be done, and that was enough. That black could meet white and vice versa. All right. Sacagawea.
Next, Phil Spector discusses the origins of Zippity Doodah, which he produced in 1962 for Bobby Sox and the Blue Jeans. Yeah.
All the clicking in this record was the idea was taken from the Harlem Globetrotters. Their record, "A Sweet Georgia Brown," that they play, their theme.
Huh? Their warm-up song, right?
Yeah, their "Sweet Georgia Brown" warm-up. It's, you know, ham bones. Got in L.A. too, and Darlene Love, we use on a lot of records, she's singing in the background. This is the old Blossom, Finita, James, and Darlene Love. And that's Billy Strange playing a guitar solo, but he wanted to play it so damn loud that we had to turn his mic off. I think maybe even Herbie Albert may be in the rhythm section, or Sonny Bono was in it, and you know, tempos on horn. It's the old Academy Award winner by Ray Gilbert. Hell, a great writer. Walt Disney movie Song of the South.
Everything's gonna be.
I just thought it would be a groovy idea to, it seemed like so incongruous, zibbity-doo-dah this way, that it just had to work. I think it worked.
Remember that Phil had no advanced knowledge of which records were going to be played for him in the blindfold test. Next, a Four Tops record.
That's the sound. I love that. It sounds like somebody beating on a chair without it with a leather top. This is the Four Tops singing Bob Dylan, if you listen real carefully. And you're walking to a rhythm is on. And everything is gone at the back. And everything is, that's really what it is. It's Black Dylan. If you listen to this record carefully, you'll notice that Motown has the same thing Volkswagen has. They have a style, and it's never really going out of style for a long time, and as long as it continues to sell, they'll go in, and the old joke about Motown is, you know, a Motown record is the same record recorded with different lyrics every 3 weeks, you know, but realistically, they're very creative, and this was really a hell of a record, and it's a drum-based sound that is very consistent. Therefore, you can build around it. Levi has a lot of the ingredients that Benny had at that time. He had a way to sell a song and interpret a song, which is the whole key, really, to what soul music is, interpretation. I think he could be a hit singer anyway, yeah. But there are a lot of hit singers around who aren't making it without, because they have no direction. Like there are a lot of great writers around who are making it without direction. So I think he could be a hit star, a hit singer anywhere. But I think they're giving him the direction he needs. He really sounds in many ways a lot like Marvin Gaye, but it's not important because the material and the direction is much better than he would have if he were, let's say, on his own.
The Four Tops, as we end our musical blindfold test with Phil Spector. The Four Tops were just one of many black groups in the 60s that came out of Detroit. We'll go back to their roots and profile the Motown sound when the history of rock and roll continues.